Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The New Statesman.
England's waterways are overflowing with sewage. In a recent report, it's been found that a record amount of sewage is being discharged into rivers and seas around England. Data revealed that last year, raw sewage was discharged by private water companies for more than 3.6 million hours, an 105% increase on the previous year. And in addition to all of this, Thames Water, Britain's biggest water company, is at risk of insolvency. Who's responsible for this shitstorm? And in how many ways is this damaging for the country? Hello, I'm Anoush Shakelian, Britain editor of The New Statesman and host of this podcast. And joining me in the studio, I have Rachel Cunliffe, our associate political editor, and Will Dunn, our business editor. Now, the problem of water companies discharging sewage into rivers and seas has been mounting for the past few years. Water companies are permitted to release untreated sewage into public waterways in specific circumstances, mainly if there's been heavy rainfall and there's a risk of pipes being overwhelmed and damaged. However, although heavy rainfall is increasing, there is ostensibly a limit set by regulators on how much they can actually release. And it's been obvious that this has been a problem for a while now, with wild swimmers saying they've become ill after swimming, people living on the banks of these bodies of water reporting sewage, nappies, sanitary products washing up in their gardens. And the alarm was raised yet again at the weekend after the Oxford-Cambridge boat race, which takes place annually on the Thames, resulted in the Oxford team saying after the race that they become quite violently ill that morning on account of E. coli in the water. And we also know that Thames Water is in deep financial trouble as well as of late. Now, Will, you wrote a really good piece on this recently with the headline, Who Killed Thames Water? Which I encourage all our listeners to go and read if they haven't already done so. But can you tell us what you concluded when you were working on that piece? You know, does the buck stop with the water companies or is there someone else to blame for this?
It is a multifaceted crisis. So there are, I think, but there are two big parts to it. So there's the poo and there's the money. There are two of those things have kind of come to a head in the last week or so. So on the sewage side, the latest event duration monitor data, which is the data from the census that water companies have to put on sewage outflows that say how long sewage has been poured into a river, has been released by the Environment Agency, and that found that more than twice as many hours as the previous year during 2023. So 3.6 million hours. Water companies spent pouring wee and poo into the rivers, not just wee and poo, you know, stuff from washing machines, you know, sort of chemicals, other stuff, all sorts of gubbins. And at the same time, there's this crisis with Thames Water's finances. So Thames Water is the biggest and most indebted water company in the UK, serves about 16 million people, all of London, and they are... they have very high debt gearing, so they have about £16.8 billion in debt, and they want to increase water bills by quite a lot to help them meet the payments on that debt. And When I interviewed the CEO of the regulator Ofwat last year, first question I asked him was, you know, when are we going to see a water company go into administration as we had been seeing with energy companies? And he
going
said,
in with an easy question just to soften him up.
Yeah, sat him down, got him comfortable. Who's going to go bankrupt first? And he said, no, it's all right. Because, you know, his line to me was, he said, I think they are starting to get it. Because shareholders at the time of these companies were putting in equity injections of hundreds of millions of pounds. And Thames shareholders had agreed to put in £500 million. In fact, they just after that interview, they agreed to put in another £750 million. Mm-hmm. But Thames shareholders recently changed their minds and said, actually, the £500 million we were going to put in, we're not going to do it because the company is uninvestable in its current state. And what they mean by that is it doesn't look like the company is going to be allowed to raise water bills enough that we will be able to get a sufficient return on our investment for us to put in that extra £500 million. Thames is approaching the point where it will not be able to pay its debts. So it has £190 million debt maturity coming up at the end of this month. So a loan it has to pay off. And it said in its recent annual report that it's probably not going to be able to meet that. So it will get to the point, you know, its bonds have already been downgraded by ratings agencies. It's not going to meet its debt. It's getting very close to the point where it might have to be taken into special administration, probably at some expense to the taxpayer. It's very difficult to say how much that would actually cost the government to do. When Bulb, the seventh largest energy company in the UK, was taken into administration, it cost about £250 million, which is sort of not too bad in government money terms. But the estimates for how much it could end up costing varied wildly. Like there was, I think the top estimate was £6.5 billion. So you never quite know until, you know, sort of a lot of inflation has happened and things like that, how much these things are actually going to end up costing. But yeah, so you have this twofold crisis, and there are lots of people you can blame. Lots of people blame the Victorians. You'll hear like lots of people say, oh, it's our Victorian water system. You know, Therese Coffey said that. You occasionally see it in water company press releases. You know, we're dealing with upgrading a Victorian sewer system. We don't have a Victorian sewer system. About 10% of our sewers are Victorian.
Also, the Victorians were creating sewer systems where there hadn't been sewer systems.
Yeah, I mean, it was a revolutionary infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's not their fault if we fail to upgrade them properly.
Yeah. And like, you know, time has passed since the Victorian era. And you sometimes get people saying, oh, in, you know, early 19th century, people started discovering new forms of fertilizer, you know, started going and mining bird guano from the South Pacific. And so we didn't need to put our poo on fields anymore. And, we didn't want to. So we just did combined sewers that, you know, combine rainwater and sewage. And that's why this happens. It is true that it is the fault of combined sewers, but mm-hmm. most of the spills are from modern combined sewers. It's cheaply built modern infrastructure that is the problem, not Victorian sewers. And why were these sewers built so cheaply? Why has there been not enough investment in infrastructure? It's because of all the debt that has been taken on. Who took on the debt? In the case of Thames Water, the biggest increase in its debt took place when it was owned by an asset manager, an Australian asset manager called Macquarie. The company's debt went from £3.4 billion to £10.8 billion during that period. And that, I think, you know, sort of critics of the industry in general point out that period was one in which very large amounts of dividends were paid out across the industry and very, very large amounts of debt were taken on. But the point of privatisation was to, well, the original point was to avoid the state having to pay to keep the rivers clean, because the EU was bringing in new regulations about how much poo you could put in a river. And, you know, under Margaret Thatcher, the government said, well, what if we get somebody else to pay for that? That's in principle, if that was extremely well regulated, it's not necessarily impossible to do. because water companies have kind of an unbreakable business model. They have a monopoly. You can't not buy water. You can't really buy it from, you know, a choice of providers. And so, you know, you have a business model that should pay dependable dividends based on investments that you make. And it could work. But all you need is to have people get a bit greedy, or a regulator that doesn't quite do its job, as Ofwat has routinely been accused of doing. And and you get spiraling costs. With these debt piles now are really big, and the cost of servicing them is very high, because most of it is index linked. So it's linked to inflation, and it's linked to the higher measure of inflation, the retail price index. So they've got spiraling costs on the debt that they've accrued, basically from paying out dividends, essentially.
Yeah, and thanks so much for giving us that thorough explanation, Will. I mean, it really does strike me that what you've said just exposes that the structure of these water companies is one of the main problems here, because like you say, they are a monopoly, really, because I can't shop around. You know, I can't decide to use a different water company. I'm stuck with the one that is operating in my local area. So you don't even have very much of a defence of the privatisation of the water companies, really. And there are groups, particularly on the left, that suggest that water should be in public ownership anyway. Can you tell us a bit about whether or not that could work?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's very difficult to say exactly how much it would cost. Some people say that it's possible using existing legislation and that it wouldn't necessarily cost that much. I think it depends on a number of factors, not least the potential, you know, legislative cost and legal cost of it. It depends how you do it. If you're going to sort of take a company, you know, off its shareholders, then how are you going to compensate them? If you're really cynical, you could say, well, you know, these companies are taking themselves as close to being pushed into administration as possible to give the government no choice but to either say, yes, you can increase bills by, you know, 40%, or, yeah, you have to kind of take the company off us and we'll be first in line to be compensated for the cost of doing so. Mm. Because that's, you know, the people in charge might see that as their, you know, the best way of fulfilling their fiduciary duty to their shareholders, who are people like pension funds, mm-hmm. Sovereign wealth funds and things like that. But I think it's getting to the point where, you know, if you look at the pollution data and the finances, it seems like there is little other option financially or politically, because it's a situation that where, you know, the incentives are towards companies pushing themselves towards that point. Yeah. You know, if you've got Thames Water dumping, so the chalk stream, the River Lee, that's to the north of London, Thames dumped sewage into that 1,000 times last year. I think the top quote that I've seen so far is from was a guy from Portsmouth Uni on Good Morning Britain recently. Who stood next to the sea, and he said...
Oh, is this the cocaine fish?
Yes, yeah,
is this the cocaine fish?
He said, every single marine species we've looked at so far is full of cocaine, which has led an enormous boom to the Portsmouth local economy as party-goers head south to feast on the cocaine-infused mollusks. But also we don't even know whether or not the 3.6 million hours is true, because, you know, some researchers say some, you know, a lot of spills aren't detected or necessarily perhaps even reported. So it's really, yeah, it's an ongoing crisis where a lot of the incentives are to actually make it worse. And and actually you guys will know more about this than me, but there are the political incentives seem towards kind of leaving it for as long as possible as well.
After the break, we'll look at the political implications of the water crisis. If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. You can get it on both iOS and Android. Just search for New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, I'm really glad that you mentioned the politics, because that's what I want to come on to next, because there are big political implications to this problem now, aren't there, Rachel? I mean, it became an issue, I think, in 2021, in October, when there was that vote on a House of Lords amendment to the Environment Bill, and that would have forced water companies to take all reasonable steps to ensure untreated sewage is not discharged from storm overflows. Do you remember this? And yeah. Tory MPs voted that amendment down. And sooner than you could say, you know, oh, I wanted to say shit. I don't know if I can say that on the podcast. I probably
it's
can.
It's your podcast.
But, Lib Dem leaflets immediately, you know, were out in the shires in the so-called blue wall saying your Tory MP voted to dump sewage in your beloved local river. And it was a real gift to Lib Dem campaigners in those kind of seats, which, you know, do have rivers flowing through them. And since then, it's come up a lot, I think, when I've been out reporting. And I'm sure it's been the same for you, Rachel, because the Lib Dems have been leading the charge on it. And I think, although there's an assumption that it's sort of a blue wall issue in places where there's, you know, wild swimmers and things, it's come up in different contexts. So last year in the local elections, I remember going to Sandhurst, which is, you know, quite a well-to-do sort of town in Commuterville, Berkshire. And it came up on the doorstep so much because sewage was flooding at that point when I visited into the local park, the Scout Hut and the allotments, and into a local swimming spot called Horseshoe Lake. And I do remember one of the doors that I was going around with the Lib Dems, and one of the doors that we knocked on, this woman immediately opened the door and went, "What happened to the swans? Have they been cleaned up yet?" And that, you know, it was a sort of top thing on voters' minds. But then, you know, all the way away in Staffordshire during the Tamworth by-election, which is a very different demographic of voters, people were mentioning it less in terms of the environmental impact, but more in terms of the cost of living crisis. So I dug out a quote from one of the voters that I interviewed. She said, "I can never vote Tory again." She'd been a Tory voter. "I'm really angry about what the water companies get away with, taking big bonuses when they can't run the service properly and our bills are going up." So I think there is this sort of sense that they're taking and taking in terms of bills, but they're not running very good provision. And people are connecting that to the state that the government is in, rather than just blaming the water companies or blaming the regulator or whatever. So it's definitely a salient political issue. So what are the main parties saying about it, Rachel? What are their plans to try and fix it?
So I think you are absolutely right that this is one of those really visceral issues where people run up against, sometimes literally, the failings of the state and the Conservative government. And the strength of feeling is really strong. And it's not just places, as you say, that are sort of leafy, yeah, middle-class bathing spots. You get people talking about, I've had people on doorsteps talking about not being able to take their kids to the seaside anymore. Yeah. And those happy memories that they had as children, you know, going to the beach, you can't do that. And a sense that something that Britain used to be very proud of, our green and pleasant land, has been sort of comprehensively trashed by it. And I think all the parties, but there's certainly Labour and the Conservatives, have been caught kind of off guard by this, because it is a problem that, yes, has got much, much worse over the last 14 years, but does date back decades before that. The privatisation under Thatcher and the sort of lack of investment and the way that privatisation deal was structured, which wasn't undone by Labour. And there is a recognition that fixing it is going to be really, really expensive and complicated. On the vote where Tory MPs voted to allow water companies to put more sewage into the water, the government has, I think, quite a pissy little press release up on their website where they've got like a Q&A. And did Tory MPs vote
well,
to...
Well, that always shows you how much of an impact it's had, like, in their mailbags. You know, that's how much feedback that they've had, that they've had to do a sort of little disclaimer.
There's a little disclaimer, like, did Tory MPs vote to allow water companies to discharge sewage? They're like, no, that's not what the vote was about. They've always been allowed to do do it under special circumstances. And I think what you have to remember is, because of the way the infrastructure is crumbling, the choice for water companies in that particular moment when there's been heavy rain is not release it into the waterways or treat it. It's release it into the waterways or allow it to kind of bubble up through people's sinks and baths. And like, that's not an option either. So it's meant to be an emergency measure. But the government's plan, and it's plan with a capital P, so you know it's serious, is basically to get tough on water companies. They want them to accelerate investment in better infrastructure, drive up monitoring and transparency so the public can see what's going on. There's a big focus on increasing the number of storm overflow monitoring systems from 7% in 2010 to 91% now, with 100% expected by the end of the year. That just means that we know how much sewage and where it is being discharged. It doesn't involve stopping it. Is the government doing anything about excessive dividend payouts or bonus payments? And they say, yes, we are clear that water companies must not profit from environmental damage. And you're like, cool, so what are you going to do? Using new powers granted to Ofwat, the regulator is ensuring company dividends are directly linked to environmental performance, which sounds a bit vague. And then it says Ofwat has outlined new measures to ensure customers do not fund via water bills excessive bonus payments where certain performance metrics haven't been reached. So it's a lot of, yes, we're taking it seriously, but I found it really hard to find any kind of concrete, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. They do say that the enforcement action has already led to over £100 million worth of fines since 2015. But if you take that in the context of some of the numbers that Will was talking about,
absolute peanuts.
It doesn't seem very much at all. And it basically seems to be asking the water companies nicely, could you do a bit better? Mm-hmm. Labour's got like a slightly tougher version of the same plan. They want to put the water companies into special measures. They say that under Labour's plans, Ofwat could have blocked 6 out of 9 water bosses' bonuses last year because of the severe levels of illegal pollution. I think that could is doing a lot of work, because if part of the problem is Ofwat isn't using the powers that it has, giving it more powers to do that, it's unclear how much of effect that would have. Giving the water power more powers to block the payment of any bonuses, and they want water bosses who oversee repeated law breaking to face criminal charges and introduce severe and automatic fines, all of which is, we're going to make it a bit tougher, but it's not, it doesn't feel like they've got a sort of radical grasp of how to restructure the system, which is kind of a key issue. But even the Lib Dems don't want to renationalise it. And I think this has been a crucial policy issue for the Lib Dems because of the seats they're targeting, because of the way they are able to win votes off people who did vote Tory but are disgusted literally by what is washing up in their gardens. They have drawn up a bill to relaunch water firms as public benefit companies, and then make it clear that doesn't mean renationalisation. The water regulator would force them to be run for the good of the environment. Again, I have some serious questions about how you would do that. And they also suggest a sewage tax on water company profits, a ban on bonuses. And then they say it's time for the government to start dealing with this issue properly, which again is a lot of rhetoric, but not that much sort of concrete action. And I think the fact that even the Lib Dems aren't going to renationalisation as a go-to solution tells you something about how difficult that would be and potentially how expensive.
Yeah.
I think it might end up being, especially with regard to Thames, more of a problem for Labour. Because the other thing in Kemble, so Kemble is the parent company of Thames, the other thing in their annual report is that the company has enough liquidity, if you'll pardon the pun, to last until July 2025. So that's when they expect to run out of cash. So that would put it into the next parliament. So, you know, the point at which it would really run out of money would be in the next, so it'd be the next government's problem, which is, I guess, why I think it was reported this morning that, you know, Rishi Sunak sort of expects Thames to sort it out itself, as in he hopes.
It's part of that plan for chaos that you've been writing about, the terrible inheritance that Labour will get from the Conservatives. Okay, well, thank you so much, both of you. And I suppose whatever the main parties pledge to do, it is going to be a leaflet issue, isn't it? Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and type your reply. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoushka Kellyan, and my colleagues Rachel Cunliffe and Will Dunn. We'll be back tomorrow to answer your questions on Scotland's new Hate Crime Act and renters' rights. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.
Trust in politics is broken, so can we get UK politics working again?
That was the last time we were happy. 2012.
I'm Beth Rigby, Sky's political editor. Join me every week with Labour's Jess Phillips and Conservative peer Ruth Davidson for some electoral dysfunction.
This idea of nuance has completely left politics. Yeah.
Together we'll focus on the policies that could deliver political satisfaction. Follow Electoral Dysfunction wherever you get your podcasts.